Joining me now on the phone, Summit County Councilmember Doug Klei. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first off, your reaction to the public hearing about the tax increase seemed to be a bit of a mix of criticism and support.
Well, I generally, I think we felt very positive about the reaction that we've had overall in that when was the last time you ever heard anybody support a tax increase? And we actually heard a lot of support last night. We also obviously heard some criticism. There was, as you'd previously noted, a person who thought that, our priorities were out of line, that increasing expenses in mental health was not her priority. We heard from a resident in Francis who said, he doesn't need a library. He doesn't need any of these other public services. So there is that out there. There are those people who think that what we need is less government. But I don't think that's what the numbers show. I don't think that's generally what our population wants.
Well, you also reminded everyone that Summit County has the lowest property tax rate in the state. And that is
right.
What? Just because we have all of these second homes?
Yeah, we have... We have about, in terms of assessed valuation, about $17 billion of assessed property value in the county. So because of that, our full-time residents enjoy some of the lowest rates in the state, or the lowest rates in the state.
The council also approved a resolution that the county will look at the tax rate every 5 years. Just to clarify, this doesn't necessarily mean a tax increase happens every 5 years, right?
That's right, and in part that is to keep the public a little better informed. One of the problems that we had, obviously, was that, it's been stated over and over and over again, we haven't gone through truth in taxation on the general fund in, what appears to be 25, 30 years. As a result, the public has not seen what we're doing to actively try and manage our budget. So hopefully this resolution just means that we will, in the future, bring this issue up and at least let the citizens know that we're looking at this and we're balancing our budget relative to our taxes.
And again, the hearing will be back at the county courthouse in Colville for another round of public input and then a vote as well?
Correct.
All right. Let's see. On other topics, during council comments, you discussed the snowmobile issue on Bonanza Flat, and I guess you've given it a new name, Bow Flats.
Bow Flats actually is the abbreviation that we've used colloquially for it throughout its long history. So Bonanza Flats is the full and proper name, yeah.
In general, you said that citizens didn't put up the money to preserve Bonanza Flat for the sake of recreational snowmobile use.
That one of the issues that there is a group of all the people, all the concerned parties that has been assembled by the city on how Bow Flats is going to be managed. And one of the issues that comes up, well, all kinds of issues come up there, but one of the issues that has come up is, will Bonanza Flats be usable for recreational snowmobiling as it has been in the past? The important caveat there is that it never has been available for recreational snowmobiling. The use that has occurred there in the past has been a trespass use. So we're essentially not proposing to take away any legally existing uses. That set aside, the question is, where did the county's monies come from? What are the expectations of the citizens in the county who spent that money? Some of that money, I believe, is coming from TRT funds. Some of it's coming from open space funds. It's a mix of pockets that we've picked there. But I don't think that anybody who or the rules or regulations that supports those funds would consider snowmobile use to be an appropriate recreational use for those monies. Further, I think that the snowmobile use right adjacent to our existing ski resort boundaries is really a detriment to our overall visitor experience.
During public comment, another citizen, Bruce Carmichael, urged the council to help acquire the Oscarthorpe Ranch. What we have heard is that one sticking point is that the county wants to get some agreements for that property at the canyons. Is that what's holding this up?
Well, it's a little bit of a long story, but when we initially looked at this, when we were first approached with the Oscarthorpe open space, which actually is, of course, just a preservation of agricultural use, right? So that's what they're currently attempting to do. We said, they were asking for a lot of money. We said, there are some other Oscarthorpe lands that may have more value for our citizens, and one of those is the stretch of land along 224. When we said that to the people who we were talking to, which primarily was Summit Lands Conservancy, they said, great, we'll go see whether we can get the 224 parcel in play. They came back and said it was in play. We then made them an offer based on that, and then we subsequently learned that the 224 parcel was taken off the table. So we essentially have said, look, we've made an offer based on a previous conversation, a previous commitment. That's now off the table. We're happy to continue to negotiate, and I believe that we're doing so even this morning. But the deal has changed substantially. The public benefit has gone down dramatically.
Right. So that's my understanding, is that there's supposed to be a meeting sometime today. Are all parties going to be at the table?
That actually is something that we're a bit unsure of. We have set the meeting up with the expectation that the people there are fully capable of representing all of the parties. We don't know, I believe, at this point, whether that's going to be the case. We just continue to attempt to resolve this in whatever fashion we can. We're trying to be responsive.
Okay. But in terms of some of the I don't know, I hate to call them demands, but yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. the terms of this agreement. I mean, is the county just digging its heels in and saying, you know what, we're looking out for the residents in terms of what this ranch town looks like and the access to and around it?
I'm not sure if I thoroughly understood that, Leslie. I'm just saying
that the county is pretty adamant that it get public benefit from this.
And Cheryl has said
that, you know what, well, we've offered lots of public benefit, but I think one of those is just having a larger easement around the property so that people can really actually, ride around without having be on the road and things like that.
Exactly. One of the things that we're attempting to do in this process is to get a trail easement on Old Ranch Road, which, as you know, is a very narrow road. It's heavily used by cyclists and residents, and we need a trail there. We also have a canal there that actually has some fishery uses in it, and we want to enhance those things. And to do that, we need more right of way. Normally these right of way discussions are not difficult. Often they actually enhance the property involved. But in the case of a pure agricultural use, their response is, well, it doesn't. It just takes land out of agriculture. We don't deny that, but we're incredulous about the public benefit of essentially hemming us in on Old Ranch Road.
Okay. Bonus question here. You and Glenn Wright held a Camas breakfast meeting with citizens last week. Any issues there that came up you think worth noting?
The Camas meeting, unfortunately, was poorly attended. We did then have another meeting in Colville that was relatively well attended. The conversations were broad. We had a resident that came over all the way from Jeremy Ranch, who was concerned about the Jeremy Ranch interchange and the and the pedestrian access across the highway at that location. Those are major concerns for us. We're, of course, you know, heavily focused on transit and transportation, so we're very in sync with those comments. We also just heard a general comments about, you know, hey, where are you guys with this zoning? How come the east side zoning is taking so long? What are the problems? What do you see, et cetera? So we talked through all those issues. We were very happy with the turnout and hope that we improved some understanding with the citizens.
Okay. Hey, Doug, always thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Summit County Council Member Doug Clyde, you're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.
Well,
as we've reported, the superintendent of Park City Schools, Amber Conley, has announced she will not seek renewal for her contract come June 2018. She joins me now in the studio along with School Board President Andrew Kaplan. Good morning.
Good morning.
So these next 10, 12 minutes could go lots of ways. I mean, we could talk, Amber, about your accomplishments. We could also talk about the school board process to find her replacement. But I think really what everyone wants to know is, why is this happening from a woman, Amber, who from the outset said that you wanted to end your career in Park City? You had plans to serve as superintendent for the next 15 years when you started. And I'm guessing, Andrew, I'm expecting to hear from you. Well, this is, you know, confidential personnel information. So I guess I'm just asking you, Amber, I mean, can we talk about it before we even get any further?
You know, I think that there was definitely a decision on my part. As you look at being a leader and looking at the work that you do, knowing that there's when you're a superintendent with a governing board, there's definitely alignment of goals that you have to be able to move toward. It's no secret there's been turnover in the board. I mean, the stats are out there. And I would say, you know, as I've been able to find stability in my personal life and really want to enjoy my own children and spend more time. I've always been a single working mom, and I think that there's an opportunity for me to be able to continue my passion with education, possibly in another avenue. I have no idea what that avenue looks like. But as I look at the work that we're going to finish while I'm here, I really believe that in the last 5 years we've done some tremendous work.
Andrew, this has really been going on for over a year now, and it really kind of reared its head during last year's school board election. And I recall asking you, you know, whether you thought that the superintendent needed to leave. You told me at that time it was a personnel issue and you wouldn't discuss it. But what I do remember is that I didn't hear a lot of support for the superintendent, that she's doing a good job and, you know, rattling off a long list of accomplishments. So, I mean, is this what you wanted to see, was the superintendent leave?
No, not at all. Actually, I don't know, what was it, 4 months ago, we renewed Amber's contract for 2 years. It was July.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe five, six
finalized
months.
Finalized in August.
Yeah,
right.
So finalized in August. But and that decision was unanimous by the board. And so, you know, it wasn't what we wanted to see. But we respect Amber's wishes, you know. And I think the good news for the district is that, you know, Amber has given us ample amount of time to ensure a smooth transition. And, you know, her willingness to stay on into 2019 is key. It's a long process to find a replacement, and certainly it's going to take us a very long time to find someone who can fill Amber's shoes, given the work that she's done, you know, over the past 5 years here. And, you know, we're thrilled to have her as an advisor in that process and to have her alongside us helping to figure that out. But no, it's not what the board wanted or, you know, what I wanted personally. Again, we were hoping that we would have at least two more years of Dr. Conley here. And but we move on and we respect her wishes. And I think it's a time where we can celebrate her accomplishments and what she's done over the past 5 years here. I mean, she came in to a district that needed a lot of help, and she returned us to national prominence, right? We had a blue ribbon school this year at Jeremy, which is an excellent thing to celebrate. We've returned the high school to being a top 1% high school. Our graduation rate is in the top 1% of the country. And I think a lot of that is down to the work that she and her team have done over the past 5 years.
Yeah, certainly, though, what we've heard over the last several months, though, Andrew, used it to describe the school board is the word dysfunctional. And we've got a couple of board former board members basically confirming that. I mean, there's no stability. There's no synchronicity of vision, as it was put in. We've got basically an entire new board, and now we're going to bring on a new superintendent. And it just seems like we're going to have to start all over here.
Well, I don't think we're going to have to start all over. I think, you know, Dr. Conley's put a lot of different things in place that will last beyond her tenure. And for that, I think we're very grateful. What I'd also say is that, you know, you can create whatever narrative that you wish to create. And there are certain people who can choose to focus on the positive and the positive of what school board members and administrators do for the children in this district. And there's certain people who can choose to focus on the negative. And I think when you run a story like you did last night, which put out a very clear narrative that there was dysfunction, and you chose to interview people who aren't currently serving on the school board. You chose to interview people who are not currently working with the superintendent. And so you're going to get a very different view than that of, you know, current administrators and current school board members. So, you know, look, it depends on who you ask. It depends on what your perspective is. I choose to look at things in a positive light, and I choose to thank Amber for her service and what she's done. And, you know, I'm looking at this as a, you know, in the positive light in terms of moving forward and who we can bring in to help take us forward again.
All right. Well, but we have people who have been in your position that mm-hmm. have some reflection, some idea of how this works. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked them, because I knew you were coming in today. We were going to get your take anyway. But again, I mean, what it seems to what we have is, mm-hmm. Well, Amber leaving in June, Kathleen mm-hmm. Einhorn leaving in June. We've got Bob O'Connor gone. We've got Tim O'Connell basically saying you need to find his mm-hmm. Replacement. We have perhaps another administrator leaving. There seems to be an active but small group of people who have the ear of the school board and making the school district kind of an unappealing workplace. Is that what's going on here?
No, I think that's an unfair characterization. You know, the number of the people you're referring to, you know, one of them, unfortunately, is leaving for health reasons, which, you know, or personal reasons. And that's, you know, a shame and not something that we wanted. We have two people who are getting to be or past, you know, their retirement level, and it's their choice to leave. And so that's, you know, it's unfortunate timing, but a lot of it is, you know, an issue of timing, right? And that's, you know, one of the things that I think we need to look at as we move forward is creating a bench, which, you know, has administrators ready to step up when people retire, when people move on to other districts or have lifestyle changes. And that's something that I think this board and the next administration needs to focus on. Fortunately, we have Dr. McConnell here till the end of 2019. We have Dr. Conley here into 2019. So we have a lot of time, but we definitely need to get started. And that's, you know, we're going to be all hands on deck over the next several months.
Right. And in the meantime, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, right? I mean, we're constantly turning over board members and administrators and staff.
Turning over staff. I mean, I'd say that, and Dr. Conley can maybe remember the numbers specifically, but we have very low turnover on our teachers. And that's something we take a lot of pride in. And I think that's because of the culture that we have at the district. And that's, you know, due to Dr. Conley, but also, you know, what's been here for years and the advantages of having, you know, such a great community. You know, turnover in the administration and on the elected official side is relatively commonplace. I think, you know, when Mo Hickey spoke yesterday, the national average is something like 2.5 years as tenure for a superintendent. We're double that. Now, I think ideally we'd love to have someone in that seat for a long time. But, you know, we have a reality, right? And when you have 4-year terms for school board members, you're also going to have turnover there as well, you know, every 4 years or, you know, or such. So look, it's when you say we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, I would disagree. What we're supposed to be doing is providing a good education for the children in our community. And I think we're doing that. you know, if you want to continue to say that we're dysfunctional, well, that's you're entitled
I'm
to your
not
opinion.
Saying that.
Well, you've said it a number of times, and you're entitled to your opinion, and everyone is entitled to their own opinion.
I'm not
but
saying
what
that,
I would
Andrew.
Say is that
the community members are saying that. I'm not saying that. I'm trying to have you address it.
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't believe that's the case. You know, we have had turnover, and I think that's a natural part of an election cycle and an administration cycle.
Sure, and just because you say something once doesn't mean that the story's over. It's an opportunity for you to continue addressing the concerns that are out there.
You know, Leslie, and if I may, I think one of the reasons that there's been turnover on the board has been, first of all, is this community has really high expectations. And the ability to solve problems cordially, respectfully, is something I think the community needs to take a really hard look at. I'm going to share that I was asked to come over to a staff meeting at one of our schools, and it wasn't about a specific issue at the district. It was actually about the community and how to deal with some of the negativity. And I think that you're seeing a microcosm of what's happening in our nation. And I would challenge our community to, when you have issues, let's come to the table respectfully. Let's solve these problems. Because you can handle it, and I'm going to be really honest, for a couple years. But it does wear on you when it's constantly contentious.
And that was exactly what I was going to bring up to the fact. I mean, do you feel like you were respected by the board? You can look at the videos from the last couple of board meetings, and you can see somebody basically calling you a liar. You can see another person accusing you that nothing's been done to address leadership and decision making.
And yet
you had nobody from the board. And I maybe that's your policy, Andrew, is not to engage somebody, but just to have them, you know, speak their piece. But at the same time, Amber, does that make you feel a little?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, from a personal point of view, I take this job very seriously, and education has been my passion. My goal is to always ensure that our children have a safe place to come to where they're learning. And while I can acknowledge that there's been mistakes in my tenure here, the idea that I've done things purposely to harm children or purposely to harm my staff is false. And I would say the team that we've been able to put together for the district, the change in the culture within our organization has been tremendous. You're not going to make everyone happy, but I'm going to say 80% of our staff is really happy. And it's not just the teachers. I think it's really important. Our teachers have a lot of respect, and rightfully so. But I think there needs to be an acknowledgement that it takes everyone. It takes everyone from our food service to the bus drivers, the first people that our children see getting on that bus, all the way to the top of the superintendency. These jobs are not easy, and it's not going to get any easier.
You've got a lot of work to do. And Andrew, where do you start first?
Well, the first place we're going to start is to get a search consultant in. Hopefully we'll kick that process off, you know, in the next couple days, do an RFP for someone to come and who's an expert in helping to find superintendents. Dr. Conley's, you know, helping us with that process. And then we will form a committee of staff, administration, community members, board members to help in the search process. So it's all kicking off now. I mean, it's in terms of timing, a lot of the nationwide searches start in the beginning of the new year. So, you know, we definitely have, you know, limited time to get our ducks in a row so that we can get this process started. But I'm confident that, you know, the board, along with the administration and the community, can come together and really bring in a quality top administrator.
We had a pretty robust search committee when Ember was hired, and a lot of community members involved were an opportunity. I mean, mm-hmm. do you envision something like that being
repeated? Absolutely. I think, the board, this is one of the board's key responsibilities, and the board is responsible to the community. And so, we want it to be driven by the community and the professionals in the buildings.
I also want to give you the opportunity, because you being pointed out by a couple of people as trying to micromanage the district, do you feel that that's the case? What is it that you're trying to do?
No, and, you know, I haven't heard that before, so that's news to me. But no, I mean, I think, you know, what our job is to do is to represent the constituents, right, and make sure that there's accountability in the administration side. And that's the job that the board is trying to do. I think there's always a balance between board and administration in terms of making sure that there's not overstepping of bounds. And that's whether it's a school board or a city council and staff or county council, et cetera. And I think if you talk to anyone who's ever been on a board in an elected role or someone who's been on administrative staff in any of those positions, they always say that that's a constant balancing act. And so I think, you know, again, as you pointed out, it's a new board. I think we're still trying to find the balance. But the intention is not ever to micromanage. It's to work on policy and make sure the policy is being enacted.
And as you and I have certainly talked about, this is a volunteer position. I think you make a couple hundred bucks a month or per board meeting or something. And again, it's a job that, you know, not too many people will step up to do. So we appreciate your service. We appreciate you being on here and at least answering the questions. Again, I'm not here with an opinion. I'm here because I'm getting texts as we speak, you know, mm-hmm. Ask him this, ask him that. So that's
me.
What I see.
I mean,
my
ask
role.
Me. I'm here to answer questions, and I appreciate that. I also think it's important, you know, as Ember pointed out, for the community to recognize good intent on behalf of the school board as well as the administration. And, you know, it is part of the national climate to question elected officials as well as people who are in administrative roles. But it is, you know, it does get nasty at times. And I have to say, you know, it's a reminder that we're all here trying to do the best job we can to educate kids and to help with education in Park City. And it's going pretty well. Of course, there's always going to be things that we can do to improve. But, you know, things are good here, right? We have high quality problems where we're trying to take things from good to great. And, you know, I just like to remind everyone of that. And again, you know, let's please be respectful of the superintendent and celebrate her accomplishments as we move into the spring.
Okay. Andrew, Ember, thanks for your time. Well, starting January 1st, Park City will begin charging a 1% municipal transient room tax to begin the repayment of the nearly $20 million piece of property in Bonanza Park, in which the city plans to build an arts and culture district. In the studio with an update, I've got project manager Nate Rockwood, along with Park City Community Development Director Ann Laurent. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see, we're in the process, Nate, of looking for an architect for this?
Yeah, we are. We've hired a consultant that's going through and analyzing some of the program and some of the different elements that we want to put in there. And that recommendation is coming back next week to City Council. And we're in the process of doing the looking for the architect. Ann can talk about that in a second. But one of the things that we wanted to let people know is as far as public outreach, we're trying something new coming up this next week, where instead of doing a second community open house, we're actually doing an online open house where we're going to take those recommendations that have come back, put them into different segments with some examples, and put those up on our website and allow people to comment on those over the next 2 weeks. And so they could look at a different element, see how they understand it, and then provide their input on how they think that might fit. And so we'll take that input, add it to the public comment. But we wanted to try a new way of doing public outreach so that we're not just doing the traditional come this night, see a presentation, you know, write some things down. This is meant to get a more sort of diverse, maybe a younger group. And then also during, you know, the holidays, to get people so that they're still able to be involved, even though they might be traveling different places, so they could still stay engaged.
So is this project going to have its own website?
Yeah, it does have its own website now, but we've partnered with a group to add this public outreach comment section, and so that'll go up next Tuesday. So that'll go along with the recommendations going back to council, and then, like I said, we'll have that up for 2 weeks. And so a new thing that we're trying with this project, and we hope to get more people involved.
So those links will just be on the parkcity.org website?
They will. We'll send out all the, you know, the normal email blasts and everything that we do to notify people as best we can. But. Yeah.
So in terms of like the recommendations that have already come back, I mean, this is what, from meetings that the consultant Duncan Webb has had?
Yeah. So he's gone and pulled a lot of demographic data, a lot of assessments of what amenities are here now. We've worked with the, you know, the Project ABC team with some of the data that they've gathered. And then he's made comparisons of other districts and elements across the country that might be comparable and might work. We're not trying to copy any district, but just elements that might work in Park City with the visitors and with what we're trying to do there. So those are that set of recommendations, which will then help inform as we move into the design phase of the project.
Okay. So, Anne, in terms of the selection for the architect, what is it that we're looking for?
Well, we issued the RFP about a few weeks ago, and we received on Monday 15 responses. So that was quite exciting, certainly a higher response than typical for our architecture and engineering design RFPs. So we are very excited about that, and we've been spending the last few days going through them. But we're really looking for the right fit. We're looking for experience, and we're looking for design teammates that will be able to work with ourselves and Kimball Art Center and Sundance Institute and the community to really engage and develop a design. So we're really looking to make a selection of a design team. We're not looking to select a idea of a design because we want it to develop over time. So that's why we're trying to kind of push the selection now, because we have been receiving every week, I receive, and I know Nate does too, emails of I want to be involved. And so we really do want to push getting a design team on board to sort of be the hub to kind of start taking this input and start engaging individuals more. We have a long road ahead of us on design. We're not going to come up with any final designs for many months. And certainly we understand that between now and until after Sundance, we probably are just going to be getting geared up, doing our homework and getting a lot of education and of the design team and getting it all set up and scheduled.
So what the givens are at this point, we got about 5.25 acres. Mm-hmm. We have a new home for the Kimball Art Center and a new home for the Sundance Institute, and that's basically it?
There are a few other components. We do know that we are going to incorporate a transit hub, and we do know that we need to park the development, and the city has committed to those aspects of it. Beyond that, yes, there's a lot of question marks about what the support spaces and other built facilities on the site might be.
And the deal was anything that's built will be within existing code, so nothing taller than 3 stories?
That's why we did the early images, even though that's not a design we're moving forward, is to demonstrate our intention on density and height. And that was part of one of the big reasons the city got involved in the development, is because we thought we could deliver a project that the community and the neighborhood engaged in more and enjoyed and embraced as amenity they wanted.
And no housing on this project. This will just be all commercial and nonprofit use?
No, the door is open on housing. The zoning does allow, it's a mixed use, and housing is just an additional conditional use permit through the Planning Commission, so that process will unfold. So, no, housing's absolutely not off the table, but I also know it has to be balanced with all the other desires and ideas of what might go there.
Yeah, and in terms of the other parcel that the city had bought, known as the Homestake parking lot at this point, when are we... Do we have an RFP for that, an architect there, or is that being done in-house in terms of future parking and housing?
We did an RFP. Jason Glidden led that effort, and it was selected and recently awarded, I believe, mm-hmm. to Method Studio. So we are moving that forward, but that one is a housing project.
Yeah. Does it need to go hand-in-hand with what we've got at the Arts and Culture District, or is it very two separate projects?
So there's a third project that ties this all together, and that is looking more at the whole area in terms of the transit and the roads and the walkability and the connections. So we have said in both our RFPs that they need to work with and incorporate something that Alfred's kind of leading, and we're going to work with him closely on how do we redevelop Munchkin? How do we connect the sites and the streetscapes? And so we are going to have three separate projects going, but we absolutely are going to tie them all together.
Okay. So look forward next week. It'll be engageparkcity.org, a new effort at engaging the community, kind of a two-week open house.
Yep.
Online. Okay. Hey, Nate, Anne, thanks for your time this morning. The Egyptian Theater presents the production of Elf Jr. the Musical opening this weekend. In the studio with details, I have a couple of the actors, Amanda Green, J.T. O'Reilly, as well as one of the two directors of the show, Stanya Shaw. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
So I guess the good news is that the show is sold out, except there are some Faro Club member seats left. There's going to be four performances, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at 7, and then one Saturday matinee. Stanya, do you want to just give us a little bit of the plot of the play?
Well, it is based on the movie Elf with Will Ferrell, obviously. It's a loving elf, cute J.T. O'Reilly here, and Amanda Green, who plays Jovi. And there's a cute little love interest that happens, of course. And it's just basically about spreading the Christmas cheer and Christmas spirit and being kind to others. And it's just overwhelmingly happy and satisfying.
All right. So I'm not familiar with the music. Is it? It was music produced for this specifically.
Yes.
So lots of songs, you two, that you had to learn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So JT, in terms of your coming up with your own elf, I mean, did you look at to Will Ferrell for some inspiration?
So, yeah. Buddy, in general, is just kind of this super excited, always super happy character. But I don't exactly want to copy Will Ferrell. So he's my buddy is a little just more like crazy and childish than just like, oh my gosh, excited. Just like more childish.
Yeah. So did you have fun playing it?
Yeah, it's been really fun. It's a hard character, but it's super fun.
Okay. And how's it been for you, Amanda, playing Jovi?
My character is actually the exact opposite. She's very negative and sarcastic, so it's been interesting to see how that all plays out on stage. It's really fun because it's like, it's not a character that I usually get to play. I'm usually like the buddy type, so it's been really exciting for me to play something different.
All right. How many kids do you have in the production?
Oh,
24. And so this is, again, it's part of the youth theater. You guys have been basically rehearsing all fall for this, huh?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you participate, what, in weekly or go more than once a week?
So we rehearse on Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays after school and on Saturdays all day. And then this past week we rehearse basically every day, and it's just been very heavy this week. So
yeah. Do you have some school kids coming to watch it as well?
Yes. Actually, we have two performances that are previews for middle school and elementary school this morning.
Okay, great. So they're just kind of getting a couple of the songs, or do they get the whole thing?
They get the whole thing.
Ah, all right. What else have you guys played in?
Well, I have done a few things at the Egyptian. I've done Junie B. Jones, and I've done a bunch of camps here. It's a really great program. But then down in Salt Lake, I've done a few shows at the Pioneer Theater and the Center Point Theater.
Great. And how about you, Amanda?
I just moved here 4 months ago, so this is my first production in Park City. But I did a couple, camps over the summer with the youth theater.
All right. So something you've just gotten into then, acting?
I've been acting since I was 6, but not here.
Okay. All right. Again, so it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at 7, one Saturday matinee. As we've told you, seats are gone. So that's congratulations. That's pretty impressive. But contact the Egyptian Theater if you would like to learn more about the Faro Club opportunities. Okay. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59.